The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hi, I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for listening to the Town Hall Review podcast, where we bring you the best voices on the stories and issues that matter. Our podcast is brought to you through partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's a piece yours truly hosted, and I hope you will enjoy. I'm joined by Michael Shear of the New York Times, who's, of course, been covering politics from the White House for many a year. And it is one of those rare times when people put down the cudgels, Michael Shear, at least for 3 days, don't you think?
Yeah, I do. I think it reminds us of as the former president would have said, a kinder, gentler time. I actually, my very, very first story ever covered in Washington was as an intern for the Los Angeles Times was George H.W. Bush's inauguration. I was, standing along the cold Pennsylvania Avenue in the cold, and it does feel like a million years ago, because it does feel like a different kind of politics, different kind of generation. And my suspicion is that the animosity that we would have felt in this city during this week, budget fights and the like, will probably be somewhat muted because of that.
You know, Michael, if you go around, you'll find lots of Bushies. I'm a Bushie. The Fetching Mr. Hewitt is a Bushie. These are people who, in the interim between President Ford and President Reagan's nomination, worked for George H.W. Bush's volunteers or cheered him on because he represented a different kind of politics in 1978-79. Right. They're still all over the place, whether it's Andy Card. I mean, they're just everywhere. Karl Rove was on TV yesterday. He's been part of the Bush apparatus forever. So it's kind of deep in the city, but it's been obscured by his son's presidency and by President Trump's presidency. But there are a lot of Bushies around.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think what is remarkable about that, too, and the fact that it's so enduring, is that in many ways, George H.W. Bush seemed like he would be overshadowed by his predecessor as well, Ronald Reagan, right? That he Reagan, of course, had two terms. Bush only had one. And so I think in the immediate aftermath of Bush's presidency, there were folks talking about how he would be more of an asterisk, that he would, sort of just connected between the two, between Reagan and Clinton. But, it really has become an enduring part of the American presidential landscape, in part because of who he was and kind of his genteelness, but also in part because of what he was there to witness and to help guide the country through the end of the Cold War and the first Gulf War and the like. Those are enduring moments in American history, and I think that's partly why his legacy is what it is today.
And his triumvirs, Dick Cheney, James Baker, and Brent Scowcroft, if not his vice president, Dan Quayle, who did do yeoman's work during the Philippines crisis, his triumvirs had significant careers after his presidency. And it's not just the Cold War, the Gulf War. It's having Nelson Mandela to the White House months after he's out. It's the Clean Air Act amendments, which nobody remembers, but fixed ozone and acid rain. John Meacham's got a good biography on him, but mostly we're going to get into kinder, gentler stuff and 1,000 Points of Life, which is great, but it was quite a remarkable. Did you serve in the White House? Did you do White House correspondent stuff after your internship?
No, I went to local reporting. I was a young kid at the time, and so it took me a while to get back to the White House, so I never covered really any of his presidency. But I think your comment about his staff is an interesting one, as we have spent the last 2 years watching the staff turmoil at the current White House. And I think one of the things to remember is that, one of the ways that politics works in Washington is that you train each party, the Republicans and Democrats, train this sort of a new generation of White House and sort of administration people. And then they usually go from one administration to the other. Not all of them, obviously, but it's a level of experience that you want in the next White House when your party takes the White House back. And what Trump has done is essentially break that pattern, because he really wasn't able, because of the way he campaigned, he wasn't able to tap into the experience of the previous Republican president.
He is fixing that a bit, because Bolton was a Bushy. People forget that Bolton was a Bushy. And now Mike Pompeo and Jim Mattis are kind of replicating the Cheney Baker. But Jim Baker is a unique figure. He is as shy about taking credit as anyone. But he was H.W.'s campaign manager, Ronald Reagan's chief of staff and secretary of treasury, then secretary of state during the fall of the Cold War, and then the legal maestro behind winning the presidency for the son. It's really quite a remarkable career. Let me ask you, since we're talking about remarkable careers, Matthew Whitaker. Originally, I wanted to talk to you about him. This is not tenable, in my view. I do not believe it's constitutional. I don't believe it's tenable. There's another story every day. You wrote about him on November the 10th. What is your understanding of whether or not the president is actually going to nominate a real attorney general?
Oh, I it's hard to ever predict with this president, because you can never be 100% sure. But my general sense, though, is that he and the folks there understand two things. One, that Whitaker can't be the permanent nominee, that it wouldn't be tenable, it wouldn't work, but also that time is on their side, that if he can just delay, that he will, that perhaps some of the anxiety that is coming, both sort of legal and political anxiety, will die down at least a little bit, because frankly, other news stories, other things in the news cycle, whether it's the G20 or the passing of George Bush or whatever else, will distract the rest of us. So I think at the moment, anyway, that's his strategy. But I think they recognize that ultimately they have to find somebody else.
Yeah, and the sooner the better, because there is an illegitimacy about every act of a cabinet member who hasn't gone through advice and consent that undermines, for example, the NLRB when they were illegally appointed by President Obama. All those decisions were undone. And so anything
there will be lawyers, believe me, there will be lawyers who are defense lawyers who are going to use that argument in court down the road for one decision or another that one action or another that the Justice Department took against their clients. Believe me, they will use that argument to say that those actions weren't valid in the it shouldn't be seen as valid in the eyes of the court.
You know, every FISA warrant, at least when I was at the Department of Justice, is signed on to by the Attorney General.
Right.
Maybe they're having Rod Rosenstein sign on to them, because I believe the deputy is also eligible. But if Matt Whitaker is signing those FISA warrants and I'm the subject of a surveillance pursuant to a FISA warrant, I'm going to argue that that's an illegitimately granted warrant. Maybe the FISA court, the Fisk court, will do it itself. Let's go back to the prison reform bill. This thing looks to me to be taken on water heavily. The Weekly Standard has a piece today about the fact that fentanyl dealers are, in fact, eligible for good time credit, and sex abusers. I don't know if they can save this in the time left. What do you think, Michael Scheer?
Well, I think, the fact that there is this time pressure on, and that the Republicans have less, time given the result of the election, makes it more difficult. I agree with you. I don't know that it's workable.
I've been very harsh on Jeff Flake because his vanity is hurting his state. The Ninth Circuit is due to get a couple of nominees out of the Judiciary Committee, which would help his state directly. Jeff Flake won't give them a vote because he wants a vanity vote on the Protect Mueller bill. Has he changed his point of view at all?
Yeah, I don't know. I will be honest with you, Hugh. I didn't check in on that this morning, so I don't know where he stands.
But it looks like
there's no reason that I can see why. I mean, a fellow who's retiring like that, there's not a lot of pressure on him to change his mind. If that's what he's decided to do, there's very little way to kind of exert pressure on somebody who's decided to leave.
No, only the Arizonans. If he wanted a future, could call him up and say, don't call me. I'll call you, buddy, because you've screwed our state. And that's what it's just
so
selfish.
Although I'm not sure from a public perspective, I'm not sure there's a lot of populist kind of energy behind a block on judicial nominees.
Michael, I can guarantee. I just spoke to the Goldwater Institute 2 weeks ago, where Jeff Flake came out of when he ran for Congress. they are out of their mind angry with him because they've wanted Ninth Circuit appointments to balance the Ninth Circuit forever on property rights, on state rights, on things like that. And finally, they have a chance to get a couple of Ninth Circuit judges who are not nuts. And Jeff Flake says, no, I'm throwing a hissy fit. That's not going over well. Let me conclude by asking you about President Trump at the G20. I don't think this China thing is the markets are certainly loving it in the pre-market. The Dow's up 450 points. I'm not sure it's all that it's cranked up to be. What do you think, Michael Scheer?
I think ultimately they recognized that the financial danger of an all out, full blown back and forth trade war between the two biggest economies in the world was not going to be good. I think President Trump's instincts were entirely the opposite direction, which is to say, to engage in that trade war. And I think there are a lot of people in the White House who are breathing a sigh of relief that they were able, at least temporarily, to get those instincts tamped down. But I think the market, if it rallies, that's great. But I think that there should still be a lot of worry 6 months from now, because what this president has proved is that the issue of trade is one of his most enduring and most passionate issues. And I wouldn't expect necessarily that this is the end of that story.
I'd be very happy if they left Peter Navarro in Buenos Aires. And he's an old friend of mine. I just wish they'd left him down there. I got time for one more. The Yellow Vest Riots. You got a great piece in the New York Times by Adam Nossiter today. I don't think the world quite knows how big those are. And if we had had a similar event in the United States in New York or Washington, we'd be stunned out of our mind. This is a big deal.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I think it's a reminder, if we needed one, of that we're in a period in world history, not just American history, but world history, where the people are in an anxious state and not in a place kind of relative calm. And I think that is playing out in different ways in different parts of the world. But it's a reminder that politics is undergirded by a public that really is not satisfied with where kind of the lot that they have at the moment, and they're looking for change.
I'm going to be looking for social media to turn the Yellow Vest movement into a massive, massive one by the weekend. Michael Scheer, always a pleasure. Follow him at Scheer M, S-H-E-A-R-M on Twitter. Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review. Your freedom is under attack, but if you act now, you can protect not only your family, but generations to come. Go to townhallreview.com, and to find out how you can join Alliance Defending Freedom to help ensure the opponents of freedom don't dictate your future. That's townhallreview.com. If you enjoy your podcast, take a moment, tell a friend to subscribe today.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.